So to talk more about this, I'm joined by Deirdre Pfeiffer, Associate Professor of Urban Planning at ASU's School of Geographical Sciences and Urban Planning, Terry Benelli, Executive Director of the LISC, LISC, Local Initiatives Support Corporation, and we're joined by Eve Reyes-Aguirre, a longtime Garfield resident. And Deirdre, I'd like to start with you. So define for us, what is gentrification?
Gentrification entails change in a community, sometimes rapid, sometimes slow. And the type of change we're usually talking about is change in the demographics and socioeconomics of that community. So usually in gentrification, we're dealing with communities that are transitioning from being lower income to higher income, that are transitioning from not having a very high college educated rate among its population to having a higher college educated rate. And oftentimes with gentrification, we're talking about racial and ethnic changes in a community as well.
And so my next question then is, what does that look like here in your experiences? Each of you have a sort of a unique vantage point. So we'll start with you, Eve.
I think for me as a longtime resident in the Garfield neighborhood, I've definitely seen a lot of the revitalization happening and, of course, the change in demographics that go along with it. I think it's wonderful as a homeowner to be able to have the property value of my home go up. But I think for me, it's a little bit harder to digest some of those revitalization perks that come along that the community that existed there is not able to participate in or able to kind of enjoy those types of perks that come along with that kind of revitalization because they're no longer able to afford the rent in the home or other socioeconomic factors kind of push them out of our neighborhood.
And we've talked a lot about Garfield. I know I spoke with you, Eve, for one of our stories in the New Neighbors series. Where are we seeing this happen in the Valley today? Do you want to weigh in on that, Terry?
Currently, we are looking at the Camelback Corridor, Eastlake, and Garfield as areas in Phoenix that we think maybe have some signs of the gentrification and displacement that the neighborhood's not in favor of. And we're trying to figure out kind of where the next area is going to be ignored and where the next area may go towards displacement gentrification, but what those predicting numbers are.
Mm-hmm. And can we talk a little bit more about some of the problems that this can create for people that are living in these neighborhoods and maybe directly impacted? We'll start with you, Eve, on that question.
The sense of community really has dissipated quite a bit because now our neighbors are new. They don't know each other like they did 20 years ago. And, you know, you may not feel like you can approach somebody, especially in the Garfield neighborhood, which was a predominantly Mexican neighborhood with SB 1070 passing and the discrimination that is currently part of our climate. You know, that is really kind of something that our neighbors that I've seen personally experience where they may not feel like they can approach their new neighbors because of fear of maybe have them immigration being called or something around that nature. And sometimes those fears are not, you know, they don't really need to be there, but it doesn't change the fact that they're there. And it doesn't change the fact that these are really strangers in the community that they've grown up in and that their children have grown up in.
But just to play devil's advocate, are there upsides to some of this change in a neighborhood that could come by through gentrification, per se?
Well, we believe that there are definitely upsides. I mean, there's when you can bring a grocery store into a neighborhood, when you can bring, you know, job opportunities into a neighborhood, when there's an infrastructure project that allows you to take public transportation and get other places. But the piece that is always the consternation is that balance of going too far. And, you know, I guess sometimes once you push the snowball over the hill, it's too late. But if we could just get to the point prior to the tipping point, and that's part of, again, the reason why we want to do this investigative data collection.
What's needed, especially in the Valley, is more public engagement processes around neighborhood change. And so, you know, usually, you know, so how do people like Eve get involved when a new project's coming in? Well, you know, you go to the public hearing, you know, hopefully the developer reaches out beforehand, tries to seek some neighborhood input, but that doesn't always happen. It's usually not until the later stages of a project being developed that the public gets involved, that these neighborhoods get involved. And so we need to think about ways to better integrate neighborhoods early on. And some of that is relying on these neighborhoods that are undergoing change, organizing themselves and creating strong institutions that can insert themselves early on into these planning processes for different projects.
this next question, sort of a big picture question. Is there someone that is responsible for this, or is it just individual communities being actively involved in the changes happening in their neighborhood, or is there sort of a central kind of lawmaker that is responsible for overseeing a lot of this?
Well, from my perspective, it really kind of lies within the hands of the cities where the neighborhoods are. And Phoenix Now is talking about equitable economic development when we talk about the extension of light rail into South Phoenix, equitable transit-oriented development. And we're certainly proponents of two words being included in any of that kind of planning, and that's equitable and inclusionary. And I think it's a huge learning curve for any community here in the Valley to actually own those two words. But we feel like that's where the most kind of line in the sand could be drawn. But we also believe that that premise needs to come up from the community, not from the city down to the community saying, are these kind of projects okay? The community needs to say, this is what we want. And then the cities kind of react to that.
When it comes to developers coming into a community and making a change, can you give me some examples of what a developer could do to involve the community in some of that change that makes it beneficial for them, or at least makes it feel that they're more involved in it?
Well, I think part of any kind of planning and zoning change that would occur in a community, there is a legal notification that they have to provide to the community. And oftentimes they have community meetings, but I don't know if folks actually show up to those community meetings. And it's kind of a checkbox if they sent out the notifications and if nobody showed up, oh well. But we really believe that there are neighborhood leaders in each of these communities that where we see change happening. And especially when change is happening, those leaders kind of come up to the forefront. And we believe that those developers should be working side by side with the folks that live in the neighborhood to see if there's concessions, to see if there's some way that that developer supports the community. I mean, if we go back to, decades ago here in the United States, many business owners supported the community as either a gathering space or even financially or, just as a place where neighbors kind of saw each other. And that world is changing a bit. From what we can see in the Valley here and probably across the United States. But if developers who are doing a project could integrate the community in what they are putting into a project or what they perceive would be successful, we know as LISC that if the neighborhood supports a project, it's going to be successful because there is that give and take. It's what the neighborhood wanted, and it therefore makes it successful because people will support it.
Yeah, just getting your last reactions, how do we responsibly develop as a broader community?
It's really important to engage community in the language that they understand. I think that's super important. I'm not just speaking, in English. I'm talking about Mexican communities that predominantly speak Spanish. So anytime there is information that comes through from the city, it's not always translated into Spanish. And so I think that's part of some of the communication breakdown. The other thing is, community involvement. If there isn't any services of translation of those meetings, then there really isn't a community involvement at all. So I think those are things that we need to look at. In order to have the voice of the people, you have to be able to make them understand what it is that you're trying to convey.
First of all, we need to change the indicators that we use to judge whether or not we're thriving as a city. So currently, the main indicators used in Phoenix and most cities across the country are economic indicators. Are we creating jobs? What's happening to property values? Permitting, that sort of thing. We need new indicators that gauge how we're doing in terms of social equity. So that's a big challenge.
And that was Deirdre Pfeiffer, Associate Professor of Urban Planning in ASU's School of Geographical Sciences and Urban Planning. Terry Benelli, the Executive Director of the Local Initiatives Support Corporation, or LISC. And Eve Reyes-Aguirre, a longtime Garfield resident. She's also the president of the Nahuacali Neighborhood Association there, which represents the indigenous residents of the Garfield neighborhood. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.